Hi, this is Mo.
And this is Sarah, and you're listening to the podcast Bird Shit.
We started this podcast to share our love of birding with other enthusiastic birders in the world.
We're back. It's Bird Shit.
It's Bird Shit.
It's Bird Shit.
I know.
Yeah, so I'm currently in Maine visiting Mo, so we decided to use some of this time to pull out a microphone and talk about birds.
Yeah, apparently we didn't have anything else to do.
You said that so fast.
It's because I'm nervous. We haven't done this in so long.
And we've never done it with each other either.
You're right, except for when we went to Point Pelee, and then we didn't really know what we were doing.
No, we didn't. We just interviewed random people.
Obviously, we're so experienced now.
Vast improvement.
Vast improvement. We're like totally different people.
So yeah, we kind of put the podcast on hiatus when you got pregnant and were not feeling good.
That is an understatement, but yes.
Yep, just gonna be very brief about how terrible you felt.
Ugh, that sucked. But now we have our another baby. Yeah. We welcomed our second girl in February. Yeah. Same birthday as Sarah's girl, which is fun.
That's so funny to me. We're definitely going to force them to have dual birthday parties where we just drink together in the future and on their birthday. That's how that works, right?
Yes. Even though they're like 1,000 miles apart.
Yeah, exactly. I've never really drank at a kid's birthday party, but in all movies that I see where like parents are hosting birthday parties for their children, they're drinking.
Maybe you have to wait till the kids are like 5.
Yeah, because like my kid...
That's the drinking age for children.
Your kid turns 5, you have to have alcohol at every party.
Yep, that's how it works. But have you been birding?
No.
Nope.
I did see a ruby-crowned kinglet in my yard, and it got me really, really excited. This was like 2 days ago for migration time. But no, like, since we went on hiatus, I don't even remember when we went on hiatus. 6 months ago?
Yeah, maybe.
A year ago? September? I don't know. I have no idea.
A while.
I've literally just been doing the daily grind of trying to survive this planet and how terrible it is.
Or this country, more specifically.
Yeah, let's be real. Just this country, more specifically. So, that's really it. I've been doing a job.
And thriving. Clearly thriving.
Clearly just living my best life, as they say.
Well, you're helping me thrive by coming to visit. Yes. With my newborn. Turns out birding with a newborn is actually very easy because you just strap them to your body and you walk around.
Maybe that's why I haven't been birding, because I cannot go on an actual... Well, actually, since my kid stops every 2 seconds on a walk to pick up something or to just stare at nothing... Mm-hmm. They could probably go birding with me.
You probably could. You could probably pull that one off because you wouldn't have to do anything, really.
Mm-mm. You just stand there and stare into a bush, and my kid would probably love that. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to start going birding again.
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, we bird in our yard, and we talk about birds all the time, and I have many books on birds, but I sound like someone who's saying they're an expert in something, and then is like, I have a collection of books. Me the expert on this versus having any experience in it whatsoever.
I mean, I can relate to that though, because I feel like every time I tell someone about the podcast, I'm like, it's a podcast about birds, but like, we don't really know anything about them. So, you know, take that as you will.
Yeah, it's...
If you want to know the same amount of information you can learn from Google, then you should turn into our podcast.
Yes. We basically just do... It's like we're the audio portion of Google, where we just read the article to you.
Yes, except that, well, I don't know, sometimes
Google doesn't... We bastardize it?
Yeah, sometimes Google doesn't always tell me what I want to know either. But, anyways, so that's what we've been doing. Apparently not a lot. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it feels like a lot.
It's like the everyday grind.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we're...
And winter sucks.
Oh, winter. Winter was... It's still winter, technically, where I live in Michigan. It snowed a week ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't actually know that. That's depressing.
Yeah, it's very depressing.
Well, what's not depressing is migration season's coming up. Ooh. So not only are we coming back to talk about birds, but it's also migration season, which seems timely. I'm losing my train of thought.
I was like, where are you going?
I don't know where I'm going with this, except that that's what we're talking about today. Somewhere in there's a segue, but I missed it.
Oh, okay. Well, coming back. Migration is kind of like a coming back to where you were.
Oh.
So we're coming back to the podcast and birds are migrating back to places.
Okay. All right.
Let's do that.
That could work.
That's what we're going
for. We're migrating back to the truest version of ourselves.
Is this the truest version of ourselves?
I think it's the true version of myself is when I'm with you.
Oh, okay. Well, when we're together. I thought you meant like on the podcast.
Oh.
Maybe it is. Maybe that's the problem with their podcast.
It's too authentic. Dangerously authentic.
Dangerously just not really what a podcast should be. We are coming back to the podcast, but at what time?
Cadence.
We don't know.
We're hoping to do monthly.
But I know we're going to come up to like the end of the month and be like, hey, did you do your research? And both of us are going to say no.
Yes.
And then we're going to release it the following month.
Yeah. So maybe bi-monthly?
Bi-monthly, monthly. We're going to aim for monthly.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to really try.
It will be produced in time intervals of some sort.
Time will pass while we make the podcast.
Get ready. It's coming.
It's coming.
Time never stops. or it's a construct. Who knows?
Yeah, we've been together for probably like 10 hours now, and it's just gone off the rails already.
Wow. Yeah. Very accurate.
Yeah. We've
been together about that long.
Yeah. So it's just going off the rails. So you are going to be here for it. And today we're going to start with
birds in the news. Birds in the news. Birds, 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 birds in the news. I can't believe we remembered our song.
And I know. As soon as you started, I had a mental breakdown because I was like, what is she doing? And then I was like, oh, it's a song. My brain remembers it. And I'm going to start with my least favorite person that exists right now, Elon Musk.
Well, really? Of all? Well, there's a lot of shitty people out there right now.
Existing right now, I would say he's kind of
pretty tops.
He's pretty tops.
Yeah.
And this has to do with his wonderful project of SpaceX and why it is putting shorebirds at risk in South Texas. So, as we know, SpaceX recently launched a rocket that many media websites were like, it's a success, but it launched and then blew up. So, I don't know how that's a success for anyone. It reminded me, do you watch Succession?
No, I need to start.
Okay, but there is a scene where they're just watching a rocket launch and then fail. I don't think it goes off, it just fails the launch. And that reminded me of that deeply, deeply, deeply. So yeah, piece of shit company in Boca Chica, Texas. And the Fish and Wildlife Service just released a letter to them basically saying, oh, Elon Musk, can you please just do a couple of things? Because there are a lot of birds dying from direct death from explosions and tests, chronic injury from the heat, pressure, and debris of launch tests, habitat loss, and then being displaced from noise. So this is especially affecting the piping and snowy plover. Your piping plover.
Hello, plovies.
Mo's absolute favorite from Chicago. They did a survey from 2018 to 2021, and in that area, their population dropped by 50%.
Oh my God.
Since this company has been there, since SpaceX has come in. So yeah, it's pretty sad though that they are being affected by this so much, and the Fish and Wildlife Service is just basically like, oh, can you just put like some noise reducing stuff in place and like maybe please just do this little tiny thing. The Center for Biological Diversity basically called out the Fish and Wildlife Service, basically saying, and I quote, they're bending over backwards to figure out a way to prevent more of what has been a very detrimental use of the Boca Chica site as far as impacts go to wildlife. Elon Musk did note that he was thinking of moving his whole operation to Florida, which I think should just happen and just chop it off and it'll float into the sea because that's how that works, right?
Bye, Florida.
Bye, Florida. But yeah, just another sad, sad moment in America where corporations are gaining more rights than endangered and federally protected species. So
God, that sucks.
Yeah. Piping plover is so cute too. And instead we're given rockets that just blow up and are never going to do anything for us. We just get a vanity project, essentially.
Yeah, cool.
So
love it.
So yeah, that was my fun news.
I think it sucks to be both amazed and interested in space and yet also hate stuff like this. Like, I do think space is super cool.
But that's why we have NASA.
Well, it's more like, is space exploration
worth it?
Worth it when you're damaging the only planet that we're likely going to be able to live on or get to anyway.
No.
You know, like, that's what sucks.
Yeah. Didn't Trump create Space Force when we already had NASA, right? Yeah. With, like, the Army for Space? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I don't know.
I was like, yeah, just send people up there to live and protect the moon. Go
for it. On my dime. Trump up there, maybe?
Yeah,
maybe
that could be a
way to do it. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's hard because, like, space is cool, but I like birds more than space, but I don't want to offend space people.
Why can't we just send little robots that aren't that expensive and then use our super sweet telescopes?
Yeah. Our telescopes are super sweet.
Yeah, they can see anything nowadays. Yeah, so just
and little,
like,
rovers.
Yeah, just that. I'm good with that right now.
Yeah.
We don't have the ability to move to Mars, and nope, we shouldn't be trying to colonize another planet. Instead, we're just trying to squeeze every dollar we can get out of this one until rich people are like, oh yeah, we live under the ocean now or some shit.
Yep, taking joyrides to the atmosphere.
Oh, God.
Anyways.
All right.
Boo.
Clearly, we're gonna get on a better note. This is not gonna be Sarah's goth hour for this podcast. But
I will say, the other news articles that I have found are pretty...
They're fun.
They bring me joy.
Yeah, they're
fun. They bring me great joy.
So we started off with the sad thing, and now we're moving to the fun stuff.
The first article that I found came from Smithsonian Magazine. It's about scientists making drones from taxidermy birds. And part of why they're doing this is because drones... in the wild have not been so great for wildlife. You know, birds can get scared and abandon their nests, or they can attack the drones, which can cause them to get injured or probably kill them. I didn't actually find anything that explicitly said that, but that seems likely. If a bird's going to get injured, it will eventually die. So anyways, drones, while helpful in some instances, can also be very damaging to the wildlife areas that they drone in.
Okay, can I just say I'm already thinking of the birds aren't real thing?
Oh, for
where
sure.
Where birds are drones replaced by the government. This and now is... the government is doing exactly that.
I know. This is not good for the birds are real movement. That's for sure. Because, so they've started to build these drones with the idea that they can use them for better monitoring wildlife in a more non-invasive way. A less invasive way is another. A more non-invasive.
Okay, so what do these drones look like? Is it like literally?
It's seriously a taxidermied bird, and they actually have wings that will flap. And part of what's cool about the study is that because they're using the actual design, or they're actually using like straight up wings from birds, they're learning more about how wings work.
That's cool.
Because it's really hard to fabricate false wings. Like, so they don't really know how to make like artificial wings from like non-organic or materials, I guess. But by using an actual taxidermied bird, they're actually able to make these ones that, like, can be re-engineered as a drone and can also be mimic flight so they can learn more about how flight works. Their flight time is not so high. They can only go for about 20 minutes right now, but they can flap forward. They can flap to move forward. They can hover and they can glide on currents, wind currents. And they have a computer software that they're using to, like, help mimic the flight to, like, figure out how it works and things like that. And they're hoping to use them right now just to, like, observe wildlife areas, see what's going on. But in theory, they could start to use them to understand migrating flight patterns.
And spy on people.
And spy on people.
Okay, can I just say I've been staring at you like a psychopath? Because I imagined if I tried to create a drone to look like a bird, I would have to use like a toilet paper roll. Because it's like beak and just cover it in yellow feathers. And that'd be like, great, good to go. I've just been imagining what I would create in my mind. And it's pretty depressing.
I mean, when you think about like the Chinese spy balloon, though, like... this is that a lot.
That was a story.
This is a lot sneakier than that.
Like, yeah, this is.
So they did say these could probably be used in the military down the road.
Stop.
But like, come on, 20 minutes. Like, what are you gonna? You're gonna like fly from like Oklahoma to Nebraska and figure out what you see? Like, meh, not that far. So, anyways, pretty cool that they're able to hopefully not make things as bad for the wildlife that they're observing by using straight up dead birds to do it. I think that's fascinating.
Sweet. Dead birds coming into use here.
We'll say the drones themselves look a little terrifying, though.
I'm not in. Can you show me a photo?
Yeah, click the link in the document that we're both in. I don't know. They just look like...
Oh, my God. Yeah. No. Yep. No.
It's so
if
creepy.
I was another bird and saw that bird, I'd think worse of the... Like, I would be more terrified of that than a drone. Like, this thing is terrifying.
I don't know. It's just so funny.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Like, it makes...
Okay, is this like birds giving their bodies to science? Like how humans give their bodies to science?
Yeah, except this is not a volunteer program.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen to your body, whether you like it or not. Yeah, they did say something about, like, their birds that were going to be taxidermied. I don't understand the ethics of how they have found these birds or how they stuff them or whatever, but, like, they're not going out and killing birds with the intent of just using them as...
Oh, that's good.
Taxidermy.
At least for now.
For now. Yeah. You know, until the program becomes so successful. But anyway.
Okay, we made this dark again.
We made it dark again. We found a way. We circled back around to the goth.
But the next one we can't.
The next one we can't make dark?
I already thought of how to make it dark.
Great.
I won't bring it up.
No, you should bring it up at the end. Okay. All right, so our next article also comes from Smithsonian, but you'll find this a lot of different places right now. But... It's about these group of scientists at Northeastern University, the University of Glasgow, and MIT have all worked together to do this study on parrots, pet parrots, like domesticated parrots, who have learned to video call each other and the impact that this has had on their social well-being. So as we all know, we recently are coming out of a pandemic that still is...
We're normalizing a pandemic.
We're normalizing a pandemic. That's a good way of putting it. And, you know, we all got on Zoom. We started a podcast using... Well, we didn't start the podcast using Zoom. But Zoom... Whatever. Video calls are important.
They're part of... Yeah, they're part of regular...
Social constructs, mm-hmm. I guess. And they were like, I wonder if this would have any impact on parrots who... Oftentimes when people own a pet bird, they don't have more than one, particularly with parrots. But parrots in the wild do flock. They live in flocks. And so even though parrots can have, like, you know, little puzzles and they can, like, interact with their owners and stuff like that, they don't have that social connection to other birds within their flock. So even though they might have these engaging things that we can give to them, they're still lacking this social component that can lead to them feeling bored or isolated. It may even result to, like, self-harming tendencies, like plucking out their feathers. So as a way to kind of understand these lonely parrots and also help them connect more, the study recruited some parrots and their owners who wanted to be part of the study. I'm sure the parrots were not involved.
The parrots consented, for sure.
The parrots did not consent. They spent 2 weeks training the parrots to ring a bell and then touch an image of another parrot on a tablet to initiate a phone call with one of those parrots. And then the parrots would, like, you know, engage and stuff like that. So after they trained the parrots over 2 weeks to do this, the birds made about 200 calls during that two-week time period to, like, understand everything.
Oh my God, that's so many calls.
It's so many calls. But what's crazy is that over the next 2 months, the parrots made 147 deliberate calls to other birds, meaning the parrot would go ring the bell and decide, like, hey, I want to, like, talk to my friend. And they sound like some other really cool stuff is that, like, the birds would react differently to other birds. So they had preferences of, like, my best friend bird, my not best friend bird. Birds that made more calls were called more often, which is, like,
Whoa.
I know. That's why no one calls me. I'm not making any outbound calls these days. But it's just like that cool concept of, like, what you invest in a friendship will be reciprocated to you. Like, that is showing up in this parrot experiment as well. The birds are highly engaged during these calls. They, like, mirror each other's behaviors. There was one example where, like, the parrot felt so calm that it, like, fell asleep, like, next to the screen. Because it was, like, so comfortable and happy, like, with its friend, which is so cute. And they also found that if the parrot was the one who initiated the call, they would also be more engaged during that call. So basically saying, like, the parrot
I called
has,
you.
Yes. And the parrot has, like, agency in, like, its choices of saying, like, I want to talk to this parrot, my friend or whatever. And then it would. And then it would, like, have a lot to say, or do, apparently.
Wow.
And all the humans that participated said that their parrots seemed happier off the calls, and like their quality of life seemed improved, and they all wanted to continue with the project after the 2 months time period was up. So really fun story, like super lighthearted. I don't know, I love it.
It is very cute, but like, do you think like,
is this where you're making it dark?
No, I'm not making it dark. Okay. I don't know, like as the like parrot parent, do you think like your parrot ringing the bell to call their friend, you're like, no, you can't talk to him right now, we're eating dinner.
You're like, grounded from talking to your friends.
No, you're in trouble and we're eating dinner or I'm busy. Like, do you think
it's a huge commitment?
Yeah, it is a huge commitment. But I feel like if you own a bird, like that in of itself is like such a big commitment because they have such different needs than other like domesticated pets that we have. Like birds, I feel like are a whole nother level. So I feel like this is like the type of people who would just be like, oh yes, like we'll definitely like take time out to make sure you can make this phone call. Like,
yeah.
Also, like, what if they ring the bell and, like, their parents aren't home and they want to call their friend? Do they just get access? I would just put the tablet in there with them and they can just call them whenever.
Well, I think they still need, somehow they have, need human intervention, but I'm not sure exactly what it looks like. They need to make upgrades to the tablet, I guess.
Yeah, to just let the birds, like, talk to each other whenever.
Can you imagine if you just, like, you've already got the noise of one bird in your house, and then constantly you just have, like, two birds talking to each other in
the
background.
That's adorable, though. That is so cute that they're just like, yeah, I want to call my friend right now because I'm bored.
I mean, that's one topic we really have never approached on this podcast is, like, domesticated birds, like parrots, and yeah, I know.
I have feelings about it.
I think we both have feelings about it, and that's why it's, like, even a study like this, while interesting, hard to know if we really agree with everything that comes with owning a macaw or things like that. So, but I do think it's cool that for the birds that are currently domesticated, that they have a way to talk to each other.
Hey,
I mean, they seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, as long as they're into it, whatever. Good for the birds.
Good for the birds. Good so for happy spirits. For them.
Okay, yeah, that's a positive note.
Do you think they give them dark?
I was going to say, it wasn't going to be dark, but I was like, do you think they give them internet access and like your parrot accidentally buys a shit ton of stuff on Amazon and sends it to your house?
Oh, for sure. That's got to have happened. I know birds have like learned Alexa and will order shit.
That's insane to me.
I think it was an African gray parrot. Of course, it probably was. That learned how to like talk to Alexa and ask for things. I think it just ordered a bunch of strawberries or something.
Okay, yeah. See, this is another one where I'm just like, no, they're too smart. Let them live in the wild before they become our masters.
No, I know. They already are.
All right. So, like I said, we are migrating back to our podcast.
You migrated here.
Oh, my God, I did.
I didn't even think about that.
What? Wow. So that's not a very impressive migration, but we are going to talk about some very impressive migrations that birds do around the world.
The first migration that we're going to talk about is the Arctic Tern. This is probably the most famous one that people have heard about. The world famous Arctic Tern does tend to put other migrating birds to shame. Arctic Terns, for those who aren't familiar, are white birds with a light gray wings. They have a cool little black cap and a long sort of reddish orange bill. These sleek shorebirds travel from their Arctic breeding grounds to Antarctica every year, traveling around 25,000 miles for these summer vacations. This puts their annual migration in the range of about 44,000 to 59,000 miles. Insane.
Ooh.
So far. These birds also boast a very long lifespan, living for a few decades, but they don't start breeding until they are 3 to 4 years old. As a result, these birds are estimated to fly a distance equivalent to 3 trips around the moon in their lifetime.
This is who we need to send to space.
This is who we need to send to space? Just send the terns. They're already doing it.
They're going around the moon anyway.
They're making 3 round trips every... I don't know how long they live. Long time.
Long time. They're making those moon trips for a long time.
But how do they do this? One thing that... Sorry, that's like the worst transition ever. But how do they... It's not like an infomercial for turns.
Exactly. It was amazing.
But one thing that... one thing that helps them make this long migration is they are super lightweight. They only weigh about 3 to 4 ounces. Isn't that crazy?
They only weigh 3 to 4 ounces?
Yeah. Yeah. That means they can ride ocean winds with very little exertion.
Yeah, because they're just getting whipped around in the air. Like, oh my god, I could blow on it and it'd fly 50 feet. What?
That's probably why the range is like 10,000 miles different, because
they just get blown everywhere. Jesus, I did not know they were that lightweight. Oh my god.
Of the 60,000 miles they fly every year, only 1,000 of them are like cognizant. The other times the wind just takes them to Antarctica.
Oh my god.
Also, this is also what's kind of funny, is they're excellent multitaskers because they can both sleep and eat while they let the wind blow them around.
Dude, that sounds... I wish I had that skill. Wouldn't if I could great? Eat while I sleep.
Oh, what a beautiful thing. And they can hover in midair, kind of like hummingbirds do. Ooh. So basically, they're just, like, incredibly lightweight. They move around pretty easily. And another thing that's kind of cool that I learned in this research is that it's been suggested that because they go from the Arctic summer to the Antarctic summer, they are exposed to more daylight than any other animal on the planet.
Oh.
I know. Isn't that kind of cool? When you think about how long the days are in the different seasons that they're traveling.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of fun. So they're just vitamin D addicts, I guess.
I mean, if you're going to be addicted to anything, that's not too bad.
Do you remember that campaign that they had in Canada? This was like a long time ago, when they were trying to get more Canadians to go outside. And so the government came up with that slogan, "We all need the D." To try and get
yes, and then it was very misconstrued.
I know, but every time I go outside, I'm like, I just really need the D today. So maybe the Arctic terns are just addicted to the D.
That's definitely what I'm going to say
whenever someone asks you about Arctic terns.
Yeah, they're my favorite animal because they're addicted to the D.
That's right. If you want to spot this tern during its annual migration, they usually leave the wintering grounds in March, which means they show up in coastal North America starting in late April, with larger numbers passing through in May. Duh. Sorry, isn't that why we all love May? If you want to see them, they don't really come to the shore very often, so your best bet is a pelagic birding trip or a whale watching trip. But there are some smaller numbers that will breed along the North Atlantic shore, like north of New England. So if you want to if you don't have your sea legs and you want to see them still, that's a good place to see them along the shore. So the Arctic tern.
Sweet.
In love with the D.
Since I live in Detroit, I'm just going to be like, yes, they're in love with Detroit. We're doing this. We're still here. I'm going into the Suishiwa. Okay, so Mo and I were really tired and started saying it in a really terrible British accent. So if you couldn't understand that, it is the Sooty Shearwater.
Because they remind me of the chimney sweep.
Yeah, it's Poppins. Amazing. It's amazing. It's the best reference.
Step in time. I could start thinking about the Sooty Shearwater.
It is one of the most widespread and numerous of the pelagic seabirds. And it is a dark brown bird. Thus, sooty looking, with silvery flashes in its underwing. It is often the most abundant seabird off of the coast of California, even though it only nests deep in the southern hemisphere around Australia, New Zealand, and South America. The reason we have this bird on here is obviously because of their migration, but research biologist Scott Schaefer at the University of California, Santa Cruz, led an international team that trapped some sooty shearwaters in New Zealand, and they gave them geotags to tell us about their migration. So after the breeding season, birds flew to Antarctica, north to Chile, across the equator, and then north primarily to the nutrient-rich areas near Japan, Russia, and California. During their spring, which is our fall, they return to New Zealand to breed. So this is about 200 days away from New Zealand that they are migrating. And they do like this giant figure eight. And it's measured about 40,000 miles that they are doing. They're having a fun time.
Yeah, they're actually like touring the world. Yeah. As opposed to the Arctic tern that's just like A to B.
Yeah. No, they're like doing this giant figure eight. But I really wanted to put this bird in here because of this fun fact that I saw. Obviously, we're doing migration. They go far. But did you know that
nope.
the 1963 The Birds horror film by Alfred Hitchcock. They have a menacing flock of gulls in the movie, but they think that the film's inspiration actually comes from a landing of sooty shearwaters in two central California towns in 1961. And this was when thousands of sooty shearwaters landed on the floor, came ashore during a heavy fog. So can you imagine the spookiness of it? So they're the inspiration for the movie The Birds.
So spooky.
So I thought that was a really good one.
Oh man. Yeah, is it scarier to have it be a crow or a sooty shearwater if you had to be surrounded by a flock of terrifying death birds?
I think the sooty shearwater would scare me more, in all honesty.
Is it because of their English accents?
It's because I'm afraid of British people.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. Well, I don't know. A crow's beak is pretty sharp, too.
But I like crows, and I have, a high respect for their intelligence. And I don't know. The sooty shearwater and I have no relationship.
That's
true.
We
have not established a relationship, so mm-hmm. I feel like they're more threatening to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's a good assessment.
Okay, good.
Your fears make sense.
Good. I'm glad that we validated this. Next, I'm going to go into the bar-tailed godwit. So the bar-tailed godwit is a short-legged species of the godwit. The adult has the blue-gray legs, long, slightly upturned bicolor bill where it's pink at the base and then turns into a black bill. It's really pretty.
Pink.
Oh my god, maybe that's where they got it from.
Oh my god, you're right.
They must have looked at that bird and been like, this is the inspiration for our lives. Blackpink.
This is the K-pop bird.
Yeah, it's a K-pop bird. Their breeding plumage, really pretty, which comes in about 3 years of age, I think. Really pretty, rusty brown for the males. And the females are a lighter chestnut cinnamon. Non-breeding plumage is pretty gray-brown, dark feathers, whitish underneath, not as exciting.
Just putting it out there.
So this bird is on here due to not necessarily how long they fly, but it's their non-stop flight. So according to scientists at GFN, this bird is really built for flight and preparing for this trek. And one of the scientists there compared their body to a jet fighter and says they have efficient fuel to energy rate and their bodies are just insanely built for this flight. So in the summer, they're in the Arctic. They're building up a bunch of fat. They're eating mollusks and worms, and they nearly double in size. And I thought this was insane. So to help compensate for this weight gain that they have before they take this flight, their bodies actually shrink some of their organs. So they shrink the size of their stomach and liver that aren't prioritized while they're flying because they're not stopping to eat or anything.
Yeah, wow.
Which is insane to me. So they basically just build up all this fuel and then shrink their organs. So they have been tracked by the Global Flyaway Network, which is the GFN I referenced earlier. And the bird is on our list for the longest nonstop flight of 7,500 miles over the Pacific Ocean from Alaska to New Zealand. So they tracked a bird known as 4BBRW for the band colors that they had, and it reached a max speed of 55 miles per hour.
Oh my god.
Flew nonstop for 11 days, likely without sleep or eating.
Oh my god.
So yeah, 11 days, 7,500 miles.
That's insane.
Yeah. Just going for it.
Dude, I can't even be on an 11-hour flight.
No. I can't do, I probably can't do anything for 11 hours straight.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so, bar-tailed godwit, doing it.
That's so nuts. That's a really cool-looking bird, too. Yeah. Also, I guess, not surprising that a lot of these migrating birds are, shore birds. Or,
yeah.
Coastal birds. That makes sense to me. But I didn't expect so many of them to travel so cross-worldly. You know what I'm saying?
You mean you were just they're going to go up and down, up and down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what the Arctic Tern sort of essentially does. But, figure eight shear waters and then these dudes who are
Alaska to New Zealand.
New Zealand.
That's kind of a diagonal.
It's kind of direct.
Yeah, but no, I get it.
Yeah.
You're like, why are you going here? Why are you migrating here?
I mean, those are two pretty cool places.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to summer and winter there. That would not be a problem for me.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful.
Okay.
The next bird we have is the Adelie penguin, which is not making its migration by flying, as you might have guessed.
Oh, really?
Oh, I know, right? And even though Morgan Freeman didn't give us this little hot tip about this bird, It's important to note that flightless birds can migrate as well. The Adelie penguin is found only in Antarctica and along the entire coast of the continent. It is the most widespread penguin species, and along with the emperor penguin, is the most southerly distributed of all the penguins. It is the smallest of all the penguin species, and it's mostly recognized by a white eye ring. The feathers on its back are kind of elongated and can be raised to form a small crest. And the immature birds differ from adults because instead of having a black chin, they have a white chin, and they don't have the white ring around their eyes. But they're such cute little birds. Although we did talk about this, they kind of look like a meme.
Yeah.
Like, they don't look...
They don't look like real.
No, they look very, like, fake birds.
But they're like a bird that's, like, you would use to be like, oh, I'm giving side-eye meme.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just kind of have, like, a vacant stare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But we still love them because every year... The Adelie penguins make a trek of roughly 8,100 miles just on the continent of Antarctica, from their breeding grounds to their winter grounds. In order to avoid the lack of sun that takes place in the Antarctic Circle every winter, they basically follow the edge of the ice as it continually expands during the winter months, at least as it is for now, thanks to climate change. And then as the ice recedes once more, the penguins follow it back to the mainland and return to the shoreline. So, as we know, the ensemble model, which is the climate change model that was developed by Dr. David Ainley, a senior ecological associate at H.T. Harvey & Associates, predicts that the 2-degree Celsius threshold, which is basically the barometer in which we're measuring climate change and its impact on a lot of species, this threshold will be reached in the Ross Sea of Antarctica, where these penguins live, in the years 2025 to 2052. So that's coming up pretty fast. And the model also predicts a steady decrease of sea ice in the area. So not looking so great for these penguins, even though their numbers are increasing right now and they are plentiful. The way that they live their lives is not really conducive to the impacts of climate change. So just another depressing call out to contribute to the effort that helped fight climate change. A.K.A. Corporate America
in the world. Capitalism.
Capitalism.
Okay, so these are Adelie.
Adelie, yeah, it's named after an Antarctic explorer's wife, Adele. They named him Adelie.
Aww.
I kind of like the name Adelie.
It's cute.
Yeah.
Do you think we could get Adele to post one of these Adelie penguins and make a call out for climate change?
She should.
She should.
Hello.
it's me. Wait, that's the a different song.
The ice is drifting away from the Ross Sea.
I was thinking of the, hello, is it me you're looking for?
Oh, Lionel Richie. Yeah, Richie.
So when you started that, I was like, what Adele song is she singing?
Because obviously I sound just like Adele.
I sound more like Lionel Richie. Okay, so our last one is the dusky grouse. So, formerly known as the blue grouse, which we'll get into. So, the dusky grouse makes its appearance on this list for the opposite reason that I will get into. So, this large grouse lives in the mountain forests of Ponderosa and then the pine and aspen and fir trees. Males are steely gray blue and they have these purple air sacs, which, you know, love the grouse air sacs. So cool. that they show off for the obviously less flashy females. So the dusky grouse and sooty grouse are both species of the Pacific coastal forest, and they were once considered the same species, the blue grouse, but that has since changed because their displays, vocalizations, and genetics differ. They do sometimes hybridize in a small area in British Columbia, but right now we're focusing on this as the dusky grouse. So now, this bird is making the list for its type of migration that I would like to make and often do make repeatedly from my fridge to my couch in the winter. And that is the smallest migration possible, or the shortest migration possible. So in the winter, it inhabits the mountainous pine forest. And then when nesting time comes, it drops a mere 300 meters, so about 1,000 feet, to the woodlands in order to feed on the early crops of seeds and fresh leaves. We're very impressed with you, the dusky grouse.
So funny. I just feel like...
Do you think they view it as their winter and summer homes? They're like, oh yes, we're going to our summer home.
We're going down the coast.
We're going down the coast. Let's be there in 2 minutes.
It is kind of funny. Like, they could basically fall.
to call it a migration?
Yeah. day a dusky grouse tripped and it considered it migrating.
So now whenever I trip in public, I'm going to be like, wow, I migrated to the floor really fast.
That's how I'm going to, whenever I get like, next time I get like blackout drunk and be like, yeah, I migrated to my bed and the toilet and then that was it.
That's going to be probably a long time from now.
Ugh, yeah, it will be. It's true. But yeah, like, I just think it's funny. I find it curious that it's considered a migration.
Yeah.
Because it's it's two very distinct, like, ecological zones, and they're going for a very distinct reason. And yet, like, why is it considered, like...
It's gotta be, clearly we're showing our naivete and...
yeah,
and,
why do we choose this bird?
yeah. About this. But yeah, I mean, it's gotta just fall into the, like, categorization of what they consider migration, moving from, like, breeding to... Not feeding grounds or like wintering grounds. So,
yeah.
But yeah, 300 meters, 1,000 feet. Is that like a football field?
It's three football fields.
Is it three football fields?
Oh, it's yards, 1,000 yards, 100 yards. Fuck, I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's not that far.
Ignore that question, please. That question was not asked and not fairly attempted to answer on this podcast.
Yeah. We don't know anything. It's not a football podcast.
Yeah.
It's not sports talk.
We could make it into sports talk. I've told you a lot of sports facts in, like, the short time I have been.
Yeah, it would be a very one-sided conversation. Or you can talk to Sam about it. Because you guys did talk about sports a lot this morning. And I just sat there eating my breakfast tacos.
Oh my gosh, those were good. That looked like a really good breakfast taco. I regret talking and not putting tacos in my face. We might have petered out a little towards the end. I feel like we kind of lost our hype because we're both very tired. But this is not to be expected in the future.
Oh, you mean all the other times we've yawned on our podcast? It's not normal?
No, we're going to have so much energy in the future.
I am proud of us as two working moms making the time to talk to each other, record our podcast. This is great.
Let's just be real. This is because we love birds and we literally just want to make sure we carve out time for birds in our lives.
It's true. Despite the fact that we started the podcast talking about how little we look at them.
How little we are involved in birds at all.
But I do think, I mean, I was actually thinking about this recently. I was like, it's really hard to have hobbies in this day and age.
So yeah, no. So I was telling my friend, I was like, just kind of like bored. And she's like, do we need to get you a new hobby? And I was like, girl, do you think I have one hobby right now? Like, what are you talking about? A new one?
What's the old one?
Yeah, I know. Like, what are you talking about? I was like, do you have hobbies? Please tell me what they are. I guess
Did she have hobbies?
No, she didn't have hobbies. She just had a baby.
Oh, so she's just accusing other people for not having hobbies?
No, she's just trying to be helpful and be like, you need a hobby in your life. And it's just like, no. I need to not have a job in my life.
It's like I need to make time for the hobby I already have.
Yeah, exactly. You mean my job? I treat it as a hobby. Yep. Just kidding.
But you did bring your binoculars out here to Portland.
I did not bring my binoculars.
You were planning on bringing your binoculars?
I forgot so much stuff when I packed. I don't know why. I think it's because I packed last minute and I was like, here's three sweatshirts. Here's the pants.
Here's a pants.
Here's a pants. Let's go. I notoriously always underpack for trips. I am not an overpacker at all. I will literally have to buy clothes on trips because I have forgotten something.
You did buy a Portland sweatshirt when you were here.
Yeah, because I forgot a sweatshirt. And then when I went to Japan, I had to buy a jacket because I forgot a jacket.
You probably would have bought that anyway.
Yeah, I would have bought that anyway.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, and then when we were in London recently, I bought shoes.
You forgot shoes?
I forgot like more than like one pair of shoes. Mm. And I was just like, oh, I need some shoes.
No just in case shoes? Oh, yeah. There's still a baby crying.
And so. I want ramen right now.
Like, we're going to go get ramen right now. That was our episode about migration.
We did it!
We did it!
We took time to record while we were visiting each other.
Yes.
And I hope you enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed it. And stay tuned for future episodes.
TBD.
TBD.
Bye!
Either next month or next 2 months. Or later this year.